Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech and language pathologist, and we're waiting on Kate, and I think she's here now.
Talk about good timing.
Just in the nick of time. There we go.
I thought, oh, my cue. Hi, Laura. It's Kate Hensler. I'm a developmental interventionist with the First Step program in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm sorry, I got stuck on the phone with my builder.
You told him you were in hot demand. You had your show, right?
I have my podcast. I must get off of the phone right now.
That's funny. We'll have to talk about your house. I want to go check that out. Uh-huh. But we'll talk about that off the air.
Okay.
All right. Well, today is July 1st. Can you believe it?
No.
The summer is flying. So if you're listening now, you're listening live. We would love to hear from you today. Our call-in number is 1-718-766-4332. And if you have any questions about your child regarding language or development, your toddler, we'd love to hear from you today. And we do have an update from a mom that called in a couple weeks ago. Her name was Venus. I think I emailed you that, didn't
yeah,
I, Kate?
Yeah, you did. Mm-hmm.
Her update. So we're going to talk about that for just a minute. She says, "Hi, Laura. I just wanted to give you and Kate an update on Andrew. We decided not to do his frenulum surgery. After much more research and discussion with his SLP, we're just not convinced that now is the right time to do the procedure and that it's going to help him that much." That's good that she did talk to her new therapist about it. Remember, she was switching speech pathologist when right. She was sending us that question. She said, "We'd like to give speech therapy at least 6 more months, and it's only, or at least 6 months, and it's only been 2. If it still needs to be done in the wintertime and he happens to get another ear infection, we'll do the tubes then and the frenulum surgery at the same time." And then she said he had his second evaluation with Michigan's early intervention program, and he qualified for services this time. They just have to wait until school resumes in September. And I've heard other states that don't have early intervention in the summer. I guess it must be tied in with their school system.
I guess so.
To not have
I know I was envious when I heard that. I thought, oh.
You would not want a paycheck for 2 months, 3 months.
You're right, but the summer off does sound kind of good.
Yeah, it does. But I hate that kids don't get services because 90 days is a long time for a lot of kids.
That is a long time. That's interesting that that's how they run it. I have not heard that prior to that one. But
I've heard some other states say that. But anyway, she goes on to say, "I want to tell you again how helpful you've been. She just listened to one of our podcasts from last year, or actually, no, 2 years ago, September 2008, about low muscle tone, and she's learning more and more about her little guy, and she said that her little boy's PT didn't explain it to me the way that our guest PT did, and she understood it much better after listening to the show." So I'm so glad that parents have our show and our ramblings as a resource long after we've forgotten about the show. So I think Michelle Wilder was our PT that was on and did a great job that day.
I remember I learned a lot when Michelle was on because, I know some about tone and gross motor stuff, but certainly not on the level of Michelle. So she was good.
Well, and she explains it so well, we might have to have her back. That would be good. Maybe we can revisit all our guests. We had quite a few guests right along that time, so that'd be nice to have our friends back on and do some little updates like that.
Yes, it would.
Okay, so wanted to give our regular listeners that update from Venus. And Venus, thank you again for emailing us. We love to hear from moms who've called in to let us know how your kids are doing. So if you've been a caller before and want to give us an update, that would be super. And we have another question that we want to do today, but Kate, I think I need to take a drink really quick, so do you want to ramble about something while I'm doing that? Okay, well, time's up.
Oh, good.
That was a quick drink. My throat is still... Yeah, my throat is still not 100% normal, so if I have one of those coughing episodes, just feel free to jump right in and take over.
Okay.
We're going to do a question today that we started talking about a couple of weeks ago, or last time we had the podcast, and it's from a mom, and I'm not going to read this directly, but it's a mom who has a 21-month-old little boy, and she said he doesn't talk at all, and that's her main concern. And she had some pretty specific other things that she was concerned about. She said that when he plays with other kids, he fights with them. He doesn't hit them, but he just cries and tries to get them away from his toys. That sounds kind of normal for me for a 21-month-old. She says he doesn't want anyone to touch them or play with them, and then he gets really mad at times. And this is the part that she kind of tells us that there would be probably more going on than just kind of that normal protectiveness with sharing with toys. And she says as a baby, he would get purple lips and hold his breath when he would cry to the point that he would almost faint. And she said she took him to the doctor, and he said it was normal, and there's nothing that he could that they could do for that until he was older. She said that he's really busy. He doesn't sit still. When she tries to have him sit down, he can't do it, and he falls apart at that point too. She said she doesn't want to take him anywhere because he's so active. She'd rather just leave him at home with his dad. She says, is that normal with a kid? And my response with that would be some of this, like not sharing, really is kind of above where this little boy probably is cognitively. And on my test, on the language test that I use, not sharing toys isn't listed as a developmental skill until way up at 27 to 30 months. Is that on the test that you use, Kate?
You know, I don't know that it is specifically named, but I do think of it as a later 2.5 plus. You know, and I hear lots of mommies talking to their 18-month-olds and even 2-year-olds about, you have to share, you have to share. And it's like, no, this is the me stage, you know?
Yeah.
Everything is theirs. That's why they love the word mine so much, because, you know, I think they really believe everything is theirs. They can touch it. They own it. So.
That's right. And that is where they are cognitively. So if you're listening to this and you have a toddler with developmental delays, it's really not practical to work on a lot of that sharing until your child is near that 2.5-month-old developmental level. And that would mean that his language is caught up to that phase, and we know 2.5-year-olds know several hundred words, and they are saying those, and they're combining words on their own in little novel 2- and 3-word phrases. Children that are doing really well with language at 2.5 are talking in full sentences. So, again, until your child kind of reaches that maturity level, looking at his language and his cognition, and, you know, I feel like Kate and I say over and over and over, the best way to look at cognition with a child who's a toddler or who's under 3 really is by looking at what he understands and about the words that he's using. So you know, just based on that until a child is talking pretty well and following lots and lots of directions and really understanding a lot about your daily routines, it's not practical to ask him to share. So it sounds like her little guy is 21 months, but he's probably a younger developmental age. So him getting mad about the toys is expected for where he is developmentally. And so she could just not have that big expectation for him right now because it's a little bit unrealistic. And I did want to talk about, though, ways that you could help a child learn to share. And, again, this is for children who are at about the almost approaching that 2.5-year-old level. And I'm taking this information from my new book, my new therapy manual called Teach Me to Play With You, which should ship any day now. So you can take advantage of that pre-sale. I think I'll probably take that coupon off after the holiday by Monday or so. But you can find out more information about that at teachmetotalk.com. But that book has a whole section on problems that we experience with late developing toddlers, children with social and language delays. And one of the problems that we frequently see that interferes with play is that a child doesn't like to share or take turns. And so my first idea to try is just to adjust your expectations, like we were just talking about, until he's approaching a developmental age of about 2.5. It's really not an expectation that you should have for him. And then secondly, this idea is from Barbara Sher's book called Early Intervention Games. Do you remember a few months ago, Kate, when I was talking about that book, when I first bought it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the way she teaches sharing, and I love it. So when you are playing with a child, especially a child that falls apart pretty darn easily with sharing, and I see those, every day. That's a pretty common problem. So what you would do is while you're both playing with the toy that he loves, you let him have the toy for a while as you sit next to him, and then you gently place your hand on his hand while he's holding the toy, and you say, "My turn." And then you help him let go of the toy. You hold it for 1 second, and then you hand it back to him and say, "Your turn." She suggests saying, "My turn again," as a model for him to imitate that and hopefully be able to use that phrase functionally. I'm so particular about teaching those pronouns that I know I would say your turn first. And as I've used this therapy technique in the last few weeks, I can't even stop myself from saying your turn when I'm handing it back to them.
What did you repeat to say? My turn?
She says, yeah, she models my turn again. And I understand why she's doing that. And her book really was written for children, for people who work with and parents for children on the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So pronouns are going to be really, really hard for them anyway. And so she's saying, you know, just model my turn. And she's an OT. She's not a speech pathologist. And I'm sure all my speechy friends out there listening to me would say, oh, that's how I would do it too. I would at least say your turn. And then, you know, you can turn around and model my turn again for them to say it. But I'm going off on a tangent. That's not the point of this discussion. But anyway, you give it back to him and let him play another second and or a minute or so, and then you do it again. You reach down and touch the toy again and say, my turn, and you hold it for just 1 second and then hand it right back so that he is understanding that he's going to get the toy back. But over the next several days and weeks, you slowly increase the amount of time that you hold the toy until you are briefly playing with the toy yourself. And over time, again, he's learned that he gets the toy back, and he's beginning to tolerate sharing and turn-taking. And then once he's got that skill with another adult, then you can introduce sharing toys with other children. But it is so, so hard for lots of children to learn how to share, especially with something that they really, really love. So I thought this was a great way to start to work on that, and I've been using it with my little friends, two in particular, over the last several weeks since I read that in her book, and I do think it makes it a little bit easier because they're learning, gosh, I get it back. She's always going to give it to me, and I'm still at the point where I'm holding it for, 3 seconds before they really get it back, so not even really long enough for them to get mad. But I do think that that's a great idea, especially for moms who are listening and are thinking, boy, I've got to start working on this with him because he is nowhere near letting anyone else touch his toys, and children that really get aggressive at that point, too, that are popping other kids and biting and pulling hair and things, you know, you really need to start working on that with mom so that they do learn over time that they get the toy back and can tolerate it. Any thoughts on that, Kate?
Oh, I was just thinking about the mom who wrote that letter and thinking it does sound like, you know, your book is geared towards kids who don't necessarily engage easily socially and don't really engage in much back and forth communication. And it does sound like, you know, not only does he have the sharing stuff, he is probably, and I'm just assuming from what she wrote herself about him, that he probably is kind of behind on language, both expressive and receptive, and he has that problems attending, you know, he won't sit and do much of anything, according to her. And it sounds like she's one of those moms who her first child was really, you know, focused and easy, and he's a boy. And her second boy is, you know, the busy variety and really struggles with those things. But I know I haven't written your or read your finished copy, but I know your rough draft, that was, you know, you described that your child may look like, you know,
right,
what may happen, and those were things that you talked about, kids who don't necessarily respond to what you're saying to them, kids who won't sit and attend to a toy or engage with you playing with a toy. He has a number
right.
of those things.
He has lots of those little red flags. And, again, some of this is kind of expected for a 21-month-old, and it's certainly kind of expected that he would have difficulty sharing when he probably doesn't understand what share means, just kind of based on what she said. And she did say that he's really, really active and in constant motion. And so she could take a look at lots of the ideas that we have on the website and that we talk about here on the podcast and that we are that I have listed in the book. But the main thing is to get that language going, because once he starts to understand some things, he's more likely to be able to use some words. So I did think it was great that she noticed that him not talking was her main concern. He probably has some sensory processing differences, and again, we've talked about that on previous shows, but he doesn't he needs more movement to help him feel probably where his little body is in space, and he is one of those kids that she said he's hyper and active, and he's constantly on the go, and she doesn't even want to take him anywhere because he's so difficult for her to deal with when she takes him to the store thing. So I would probably go ahead for this mom and suggest that she get an early intervention evaluation and have them take a look at where he is developmentally, because chances are he would qualify since he has no words and, like you said, probably has lots of difficulty understanding language as well. So I hope that she's listening today. And, you know, it's so fun, so I was going to say funny, but it's not funny. And every time I say this, I'm stepping over my words and apologizing for it. But moms always will write this long list of concerns, and then they'll say, am I overreacting? No, you're not overreacting. Go ahead and pursue services for him, because she knows just based on her earlier parental experience that, you know, he has some red flags. He's demonstrating some behaviors that are red flags, and things aren't moving along like they should. So I think she should certainly go ahead and pursue having him evaluated.
And, Laura, I like the point you made, so I'm going to reiterate, that when he starts to understand language, and again, we're making pretty gross assumptions here, but even let's talk about kids we see. When they begin to understand, even if it's not at age level, but once words begin to take on meaning for them, even if they cannot say a word themselves, typically kids who understand language sit and attend to language. They look you in the eye. They respond to what you're saying. That, you know they're, quote, unquote, listening, and they're responding. And I think that's, you know, that's one of our many worn-out topics, is that parents kind of get oftentimes kind of set on or focused on he's not talking, and they miss that he's not really understanding. And
generally,
yeah, and I think that parents would oftentimes are be confused about, well, yeah, he understands because he may respond to a thing or two that mommy says. Do you want to go outside? Would you like a cookie? And they get a response. So then they assume, well, he gets language, but there's a whole lot else that he really isn't responding to. And I think that's totally true, that when kids begin to really understand, they are interested for the most part. They may not want to hear it's time to come inside, but they're very happy to hear it's time to go outside. And you see that they stop and they respond and they look you in the eye. And it sounds like this guy, the reason he's so busy, well, no, the reason he doesn't stop and quote unquote listen is that it doesn't probably mean all that much to him. And I think, boy, what would I act like if everybody opened their mouths and all I heard was blah, 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 you know, just wah-wah. I'd be saying, see you later. This is really boring. You know, I don't know what in the heck you're talking about, so I'm on the move. And that's kind of the behavior that describes a lot of those kids. And I think it's easy to miss. Not only is he not using words, he's not really probably understanding what he should be understanding, even at 21 months, because 21-month-olds, they're supposed to understand quite a bit. And when they do, even if they have no words in their non-existent vocabularies, if they can't say one word, they still listen. You know, I mean,
right,
I see lots of kids.
Right, follow some directions.
Right.
Yeah.
I see lots of kids who have no words at 21 months, but they're listening to most everything I say, or things that mommy says, or things that their big brothers
right.
say. And you can tell they really do get it because they're responding appropriately. And he's so busy moving because that all those words probably don't mean too much to him. So
right.
anyway, once again, the same old point, but I do feel like we can't really emphasize that too much because not only do we see parents miss it, we even see other professionals miss that. You know, they get
exactly.
kind of hyper-focused on, we got to get them talking. And you're probably not going to get a child talking who isn't understanding. So
if you did get him talking, it wouldn't make any sense. Like when we think about our little friends that are on the spectrum, and when we get them, they might be saying lots of words, but nothing fits the situation. They're quoting the Dora episode that they heard, or they're singing a song. But even though they can talk, they're not using language socially. They're not using it to request what they want. They're not using it to make connections with mommy and daddy and everybody else. So they don't, you know, they lack the social connectiveness there. Even though they have words, it doesn't make sense. Ooh, I have to sneeze. Go ahead. I'm going to mute for. Okay, sorry about that.
Bless you.
Thank you. Sorry, didn't mean to hijack your point there, but even if he were talking, it may not. I mean, haven't you had referrals where kids are on the spectrum and they're talking, but it makes no sense whatsoever?
Right. It's really
you know,
not,
not using words
to anybody but perhaps
right.
himself. Right. You can, right. You're looking around right. thinking, why did he say to infinity and beyond?
Right.
There's nothing related. You know, I always try and figure out what inspired that.
What's the connection?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, where did that come from?
Right.
Yeah. And so, yes. And, you know, occasionally we do see those kids, and they are typically on the spectrum. But normally when kids don't talk until they understand, and if they do, there's
exactly.
probably more going on. And I always assume, well, let's get them understanding, and then we'll see
right.
what else is going on, because it all kind of starts there. Well, no, I'll take a step back. It really starts with the social connection.
It really does.
And that's another one that isn't necessarily, voiced as much as I think it should be, you know, by me, by other providers. We go right into, we want them to understand, we want them to communicate, we want them to express themselves verbally, and if there's no social connection or very little social connection, if that doesn't look typical at all, then really that's where it starts. And that's kind of the impetus behind your book, isn't it? That
it totally is. And it's about making that connection with mommy and daddy, and not just the connection where I'm crying and I obviously want you to pick me up, that social spark that we talk about. You always talk about the kid that you're playing with that gets twinkly, that has twinkly little eyes. You can see that they're totally engaged with you and so into what you're doing. And lots of our children with language delays, when we really peel back the layers, it starts way back that they aren't making great social connections. And so hopefully parents can start to realize that and really kind of take a look at that and think, okay, this, you know, whole communication piece is really more than just talking. It's starting looking at if they're interacting with me, if he's smiling with me, if he's staying with me when he's playing, then is he understanding my language? And then finally, the words and the intelligibility are the last pieces that we look at with a kid. And so Teach Me to Play With You really talks about how to engage those children that are really, really difficult to get their attention, the kids that kind of roam around, the kids that are, like she said, are in constant motion, that you really can't get them to settle down and stay with you and listen to you because they're missing that first foundational piece, which is really making that social connection. So for kids like that, sometimes you really have to start with what we call social games, where you're teaching them to play those little routines with you and back and forth, and where they really start to understand, gosh, my mom is really fun, and I want to play with her, and I want to look at her face to see what she's doing, and I want to stay right here instead of looking out the window or looking at the ceiling fan or opening and closing this cabinet door. I'd rather be with mommy because she's a lot more fun. And once kids make that connection, then you build on that, and then they can start to understand what some words mean. They understand when you say, when they're under the blanket and you pull, you're saying, you know, where's Lucas? Where's Lucas? And then you jerk the blanket off their heads and say, boo. They start to understand, you know, boo is that funny word that cracks me up every time my mom says it. First I don't see her, and then I do, and then she says that word. That's what that means. You know, so they start to really link those words that you're using with those little social games, and that's your foundation for helping them understand language from that point on. But it does all start with making that connection. And so there are lots of little games that you can do in the book, little songs, little rhymes. And the part that I like the most about this is that it's taking you from step A to step B to step C, so that you're really seeing how a therapist thinks and how when we play with a kid, what we look for. So I think it's going to be a good tool.
I do this, or at least I attempt to do it, all day, every day, and just having it so specifically spelled out for me was helpful and helps me kind of think through, okay, what if, and what am I looking for, and what do I do if it doesn't pan out?
Right.
It's very, and you need to stop using the adjective little.
It's
little
not
games.
A little book, is
little
it?
Games, it's little songs, little, yeah. Let's say, wonderful. It's wonderful, but wonderful songs and wonderful games.
No, I mean, they are, because and you kind of have it blocked out that way, where the ones that you do in the initial part of the book are more simple because they're kind of
right.
geared towards kids who really don't have the ability at that time to respond. And so, and that's definitely what we do in the trenches, is we start out with these simplest games because we want them to be very repetitive and very simple and hopefully very easy for them to, on some level, comprehend and then respond to. So in the beginning, they're pretty simple, and then as it goes on, they become more complex because we're kind of upping the ante on these kids. Once we get them with the peekaboo,
exactly.
then we move them along to the next and expect their comprehension to, you know, to be commensurate with where they are developmentally. But so that is – go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that's I hope that it ends up being a good tool. So you can take a look at that. I did want to go ahead and announce something else that I'm very excited about, too, that I was supposed to do at the beginning of the show and I kind of forgot about. But I'm starting to offer continuing education events for speech pathologists and developmental interventionists and anybody else who wants to come. And my first date is August 26th. And it's going to be right outside Indianapolis, Indiana. So any Hoosiers listening today, I'd love for you to come out and see me then, and I'll have information about that on the website before the end of the weekend. I'm so excited.
Oh, Laura, I can't believe you just have to stay in the trenches at least one day a week.
I'm still going to be seeing kids for a long time. I don't think you're getting rid of me like that.
Oh,
but
okay.
But I'm very excited about that, and I hope to have other dates that I get to announce through the fall and on into next year. Or if you are listening and you want me to come talk to your early intervention group or have a conference there, I would love to do that. And, again, you can find out information about that at teachmetotalk.com, and I'm going to have that new category posted again in the next couple of days. It'll say Continuing Education Conferences. So I'm so excited. It's been a dream of mine for a long time, so I'm finally getting to do it. So that'll be real fun.
You have been working towards this goal for a long time, and this sounds corny, but this is the truth. I've even told Laura this. I find her mesmerizing when she talks, and anybody listening to our podcast knows there's something about the way your voice flows and the way you word things, and it's always very kind of, you know, mother-oriented, but yet with a professional spin on it. It always makes sense. It always is very logical and easy to understand. And I don't know that I'll grace you with your very first conference and show up in the audience. You'll be saying, oh, there she is. But I'm sure I will attend, and it would be cool if some of our podcast people chose to go. I'm sure we've had some in the Midwest, so that would be neat. It wouldn't surprise
it
me.
Would
somebody
be
raised their hand and said, I bought the DVDs and I listened to your podcast and I use your website. And so I think it'll be, it's you know, kind of a professional, but I don't know that it's one of your strengths, I think, Laura, is that although you're very professional, you don't speak in professional jargon. You don't,
right,
you know, ramble on about stuff that really isn't relevant. You're great with explaining it to parents, and yet you do have the professional spin on it. I mean, the experience to know what it is you're saying. And
well, it will be at the level for professionals to learn things they haven't learned before, but it will still all make sense if a parent decides they want to go too.
Right.
Does that make sense? And I think that I'm so excited. I've, you know, spent the last couple of weeks, especially while I was so sick last week, really working on developing it. And it's going to be really based on a lot of the things that we talk about here. And it's called Early Speech Language Development, Taking Theory to the Floor. And so it's starting with your really basic, okay, when I get this early intervention referral, what are the first things I'm going to look for? And we're going to go step by step by step and talk about that hierarchy of treatment. You know, you see a kid and his parent probably is saying, I can't understand what he's saying, and you think, oh, well, I'm going to go in and we're going to look at expressive language and we're going to talk about speech intelligibility. And after you've been there for 15 minutes, you realize, uh-oh, this kid is doing nothing but jargon. And you think, oh, he's not really following many directions. And then you realize, I cannot get his attention to save my life. So, again, it's the same kind of basic premise that we talk about here on the show, but with using some of the professional jargon, lots of videotaped examples so that you can see how these things look. Lots of things that it's not just going to be from the DVD thing either. It's the stuff that you've already seen on the DVDs. It's current kids that I have on my caseload right now that I'm filming so that you can see how that looks. And again, if you are a seasoned professional like Kate and me, don't think that there's not anything here for you, because it really is going to go into lots more clinical detail than we're able to do here on the show. So I don't want anybody to get cold feet and think, oh, it's just a rehash of the podcast, because it's not. So come see me. I'd love to see you and give you those professional checklists that I'm developing and really kind of take you to that next level as far as what the podcast or the DVDs would be.
Well, and what I like as a quote-unquote professional is that it is that tagline about taking theory to the floor, because what I find in going to trainings or conferences so often is that it's really all theory, or it's six
right.
hours of theory and 20 minutes of implementation, you know.
Or 6 hours of assessment.
Yeah.
And then you get to treatment at about 3 o'clock. And you're thinking, no, I wanted treatment at 9:15.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to hear about treatment at 9:15, not at 3 o'clock when we're
right.
about to leave.
To me, it's not so difficult to understand the theory, and it's not so difficult
right.
to determine what isn't right with a child once you've had the training and the experience, but it is pretty difficult to know, okay, now I know this is where
right.
he's functioning, and I suspect this could be going on with him. What do I do about it? You know, that's the hard part. That's, to me,
yeah.
You know, that's the part.
And it's a part I think about all day, every day. And in the last 2 years, especially when I started, or 2.5 years now, when I started doing the website, and then we put together the DVDs. And, you know, you and I had this conversation, I think it was on Tuesday this week, where we were talking about this, and I was telling you how excited I was, blah, 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 blah. And we were saying, you know, it has made me a much better therapist, because I have spent the last 2.5 years really thinking about, why do I do this? What's the reason? What kind of kid does this work with? What kind of kid does this not work with? when this doesn't work, what do I try after that? And so that's what I'm hoping that we can do with continuing education things. And mostly because it wasn't out there when I first started doing early intervention. And, yes, you could read lots of the theory. I loved reading Dr. Greenspan's stuff about autism and about floor time. And although he would describe it, it's a lot harder to do something that you just read about.
I think it's, yes, great work. But I don't read it and say, now I know what to do. You know,
well, I had to really work a lot of that out.
I mean,
I remember reading that when it came out in like 1998, 1999, and thinking, okay, how do I make this work? And I can think about my kids that were kind of my test kids. Thinking about this one little blonde-headed boy named Aaron. He's probably, you know, I guess if he was 2 in 1998, what would that make him now? I guess he's Macy's age. He would be 14.
Right.
You know, and I think about trying to do with him when I was first reading about that, all the, you know, and thinking, okay, here's a kid. I know he's autistic, but he's not diagnosed. His mom is nowhere near hearing this. She just wants him to talk, but doesn't she get he's not even looking at her. He's not even interested in this. All he wants to do is, you know, flick his little helicopter propellers while I'm there. So it was really taking that, and I know other people have done it too. I'm not trying to act like I invented the wheel here or anything. I'm just saying I hope this will be a good tool for speech pathologists who are searching for better and more efficient ways to do things, and you can cut out that whole 12-year process with does this work, does this work, does this work, why does this work? Because I spent a lot of time thinking about that and talking about it and talking to you about it and our other friends and our other colleagues and really reading, kind of putting it all together for what I hope is a really good basis for why we do what we do in early intervention, what works, what doesn't work, what doesn't work. And it's not just taking things that work for school-aged children and trying to do the same thing and make it work. Early intervention is a whole discipline in and of itself. And speech development, again, while it is kind of easy to know the theory and whether or not kids qualify for your program or not, for most therapists, that decision is made before they even get to you. You don't even have that responsibility anymore. It's knowing how to take a kid and look at him and think, okay, this is where I need to start treatment. This is what I need to do with him. And more than that, this is what I need to teach his parents how to do. And so I hope that the conferences are going to be that. I'm so excited about it, and I hope that when I'm near you that listeners will come see me. Even if you're a parent, you know, come see me. I'd love to meet you. So.
Well, you were generous in saying that they can teach it when you were in school. I'm going with, I don't think they teach it now either. I'm really serious.
I've sell a fair number of DVDs to speech and hearing programs.
Right.
So I think that that is better than when I went to school. And I know that
DVDs are available.
But it is more than theory, and there's a big difference between knowing what's wrong and knowing what to do about what's wrong, knowing
right.
how to move that from a theoretical, oh, we got to teach him to be more social. Well, how the heck do you do that? He has receptive language problems.
And really only cares about opening and closing the doors and, you know, jumping off the couch. Well, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And so those, I hope it's going to be, or I feel pretty confident that if you go, you're going to learn some new stuff. So there you go. But I'll be announcing more dates about that as we go. But I'm so excited about that first one, and I wanted to announce it here even before I got it on the website. So in this same direction, one speech pathologist, and I have forgotten her name, has sent in multiple requests for us to talk about. And now we have about 20 minutes left, so I hope we can cram all this in. We may have to carry this over to next week too. But talk about making the transition from seeing children in a clinical setting, which is what she's done, is now she wants to start to do early intervention and some home visits, and apparently she's a little bit scared about that. So she asked us for our tips to make that transition easier for her, and how to, what kinds of things she should think about as she begins her practice. Kate, do you want to go ahead and get started with that? When we were talking about this morning, you said, I would tell somebody right away that they should.
They should have a really good collection of toys.
That's right. That's what I think, too. Number one tip.
Yeah, number one tip. And that's going to fly in the face of the early intervention gurus on the state and federal level who say, you shouldn't take toys, which our state says. And we say, mm-hmm, well, we'll just keep taking them and see how what happens.
You're going to have to pry those out of my hands. Yeah.
Right. I cannot imagine. Now, with some kids, yes, it would be just fine. They have a wonderful collection at home, and they like toys, and it's really not a big problem. You could certainly forego taking your own toys to those kids, although I don't, even with those kids, because what I find is what I have is novel, and they're more interested
right.
in what I have, and it helps to... complete that circle when if I take in something cool, yeah, they're excited to see me. Yeah, they want to come sit next to me or on my lap and play with that toy. And will I use that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I certainly will. And, you know, the theory against that is, well, we should use what they have in their home. And, oh, this is the natural environment. But if we're talking about kids who really don't attend or are not interested in what they have at home, then, you know, I don't really understand what the theory is. I guess I understand it. I just don't agree. I think, well,
you go
in there
yeah.
and show me how that works. Because that would go ahead.
Well, and lots of those experts, too, were saying that everything should be totally consultative and you should just really sit at the kitchen table with mom and tell her the things that she should be doing. And I totally believe that we should involve parents in therapy, but 99% of my therapy sessions do not happen at the kitchen table. They happen on the floor in a family's home with mom and or dad or nanny or whoever's the grandmother, whoever's there participating with us. And it's never enough just to tell a parent how to do it. You have to show them. And if you don't have lots of tricks in your little bag, including cool toys that you know how to play with and that you know how to get a kid to play with, you're not going to be very successful in modeling how we move a child from being nonverbal to imitating some sounds. And by sounds, I don't mean letters. I mean play sounds, animal sounds, to words, imitating signs, and then move them right along that communication continuum. And you've got to be able to show them how to do it and not just talk about it. You know, you need to be modeling play and modeling all those cool language facilitation techniques that their speech pathologists, I'm sure, they could call us and rattle off, you know, 25 techniques to use and may not even know how to use those with a real kid and real toys. And so this new person and any other therapist listening, whether you be a speech pathologist or a developmental interventionist like Kate, really think about your toys and what you're using. And if you're taking in the same book and two puzzles and, I don't know, okay, give me some bad examples. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Reevaluate your practice here. And if you're not sure what toys are relevant and fun, take a look at my website at teachmetoshot.com. There's a whole section on toys, and I've got an article there that lists cool toys that Kate and I both play with and like and recommend, and I have the little word list listed there. A lot of that stuff is also in my manual, that Teach Me to Play With You that we've been talking about, or check out the DVDs. There's tons of toys there, and I get an email. I used to get them more often than I've gotten lately when the DVDs first came out. Lots of my emails from therapists were, where can I buy the little blue you know, and then they would describe the toy. Because toys really do matter. Materials matter for this age group, almost more than any other age group than you would that you would target. These are your office supplies. So you need to invest some money in that, and don't just have the same little three or four things that you take in for all 20 kids you see in a week, and you're going to use them, you know, for 6 months. You want to have a huge supply so that you're really rotating those. So like Kate said, you can really use novel things so that you can expand a kid's play, and you think, okay, he likes this puzzle. What am I going to do next time when I go? You're not going to take that same exact puzzle for 6 weeks in a row. You think he likes puzzles? Okay, we're going to do a different puzzle. You know, we're going to expand that. He liked playing with my little swirly racetrack with these cars. What's another little car game we can play that's not that same thing that kind of bumps him up the level, bumps him up the developmental level? How can this be a little bit more complex play? So you need to get a big array of toys kind of to cover the developmental range of all the children that you see. And we talk about toys all the time, Kate. Can you imagine trying to do this job without a big inventory to kind of pull from and use?
I'd be at Toys R Us at 7 a.m. buy a new one.
Well, didn't you say that a friend of ours, I'm not going to say her name, but had her house broken into or her car stolen or something, or I don't remember that exact story, but she didn't have any toys, but before she went to work that day, she stopped at Target and bought a whole bunch of stuff to take with her?
I mean, it's fundamental. You would have to. There's no way. And for moms, I always recommend that they really keep some toys for their, quote-unquote, therapy play when they're, specifically targeting. Because, you know, we always recommend they work it into their daily routines, but perhaps even more important is that they have a specific time each day, 20, 30 minutes, where they are really...
That one-on-one playtime, yeah.
I say, hey, if he loves Thomas the Train, don't let him have Thomas the Train unless you're doing your therapy time. Because
the
same holds true for them. And if little Johnny gets Thomas all day long, don't be surprised if when Mommy sits down to play with Thomas and he's had it all day, he doesn't care all that much. Because he's had it.
Exactly.
I mean, they're just like, in that respect, they are just like adults. I know I'm that way. If I've had it, it's not so exciting. If it's new, I'm thrilled. And that's really the way they are. The other one I'd add to the toy thing, and this, again, flies in the face of what some therapists would say, don't forget the treat bag either.
Take some snacks. Yeah.
I mean, first you have to get over, do they have any allergies? And if they don't, great. And hopefully you have a mom.
Or if they do, just use something that they're not allergic to.
Them, right. Or some moms really, really, really adhere to my, you know, 20-month-old does not eat any junk. And by junk, I mean, you know, M&Ms, fish crackers, Oreos.
Cheese balls.
Right now I have a slew of chips. Kids. I don't know why, but lots of my little kids, I keep stacks in business buying those canisters of stacks. But if the mom can, you know, grin and bear it and tolerate that you're using a little bit of junk food, and I always give very, very, very small portions. So even if I'm giving cookies, he might eat two baby Teddy Grahams. You know, I mean, it's not like we're saying, here's the can, have at it. So.
Right, and with an Oreo, even with the mini Oreos, I never give a kid the whole Oreo. You know, popping that sucker open, and he gets one, the top, when he signs or says cookie the first time. Then he sits and chews, and we wait and wait and wait and wait and wait, and then he has to ask or sign for that second piece. So it's not like they're getting 15 or 20 cookies when you're there. It might be three or four tops.
Because, again, for a lot of kids, not all kids, but for a lot of kids, nothing's more motivating than whatever their snack of choice is. And I've, over the years, had some therapists really kind of judge that harshly. I remember years ago, a speech therapist in Indiana said,
I would
never use M&Ms or maybe cheese balls. And I thought, well, that's a shame because he really loves them and he will do amazing things to get a couple cheese balls. So,
And we have to motivate children, and what's more motivating than that junk food for those little kids? And again, you're not giving it to them 24/7. You're using it as a highly motivating activity to entice them to sign or talk. And when you put it like that to parents, I've hardly had anybody balk with that. Or, you know, I'll make a joke and say, okay, let's try him with a green bean and see if he's going to say and sign for that green bean. And then how about we back up a little bit and let him, you know, have this chip. I think we're going to be okay there. And most moms realize, oh, this is not that big of a deal. And if whatever I need to do to get my child motivated enough to communicate will translate into other things, and it's just kind of a vehicle to get us there. So
right.
I think that's great advice.
That is the case that I'll use facts more in the beginning. And then,
right, yeah, me too.
Then I've had time to establish what does he like to play with, what does motivate him in addition to the snacks. And a lot of times we move beyond using snacks. You know, it can be a great icebreaker, get them with you, get them liking you, get them playing, get them responding, get them communicating, and then you really, you know, it depends on the child. But some kids really kind of get beyond that.
They do, and I do think it's a great way for kids who are really active and who they only have two or three things that they like. You need to be doing that, and this is the other thing, is use your toys, but also have a pretty good repertoire of high-energy things that you can do with our toddlers, like playing bubbles, playing balloons, getting yourself some, you know, again, little play routines. And if you don't have any, you can get those from the website or get those from the book that, you know, talk about how to use jumping, how to use swinging, how to make that communicative, how to, again, teach yourself a little routine that way. I do always say little before I say routine, don't I? Teach yourself a play routine so that you know how to incorporate movement into your therapy sessions. And so you have several toys, that cool toys that a child would want to play with. You have several games that you have decided that you would use or that might be good for this child ahead of time. And you have snacks. And so that'll carry you through the bulk of your hour. And then one thing that I always want to talk about with therapists who write into the website or, you know, who we talk to on the show is really helping moms and dads participate. But again, you're going to show them how to do it. It's like the tagline that I use for the receptive language DVDs for Teach Me to Listen and Obey. You tell them, you show them, and then you help them. And so you're going to tell them how we're going to use the techniques or what you're doing during play. You know, aren't you constantly, Kate, with your moms and dads that are very participatory, kind of narrating your therapy as you do it? And you'll say, oh, I heard that he just used that sound, and so now we're going to try to get that in a word. You know, you're talking out loud about your therapy techniques with your parents. So you're telling them, then you're showing them how to do it. And then at the end of the session, I always spend some time talking to moms and dads and nannies and grandmothers about what a child did, what was kind of new from the last week, what I, you know, again, I'm always trying to say, you know, this is what we're working toward, this is our overall goal, this is kind of what we got today, and then here's some things that I want you to be doing this week with him, so that you're kind of giving them very realistic but practical things that they can do and ways that they can play. And you just brought up a few minutes ago about that one-on-one playtime. That's something I'm always talking to parents about. But I wasn't so great about talking to parents about that when I first started practicing. And I didn't always do that parent training piece that well at the beginning. So that's something she really needs to train herself to do from the beginning. And I leave a little homework sheet or a little sheet where I, again, write what we did, what the focus of our session was, and then things that I want them to do at home. And Kate, I think you have a little sheet that you use like that as well.
Right.
And so that's something that I would develop if, you know, that I would recommend that a therapist do is, you know, if you don't have a tool that your program uses for a little reminder sheet like that for parents, make one up yourself. We don't have a formal sheet. Every therapist I know kind of does their own like that. And it could be something as simple as just, you know, speech therapy recommendations or speech therapy visit and the date and a whole lot of blank space for you to write it in. Or if you're more kind of a checklist kind of girl, make yourself a little list of what you think parents should know. You know, I usually write the words or the signs or the phrases that we did that day or that the child said. And it, I think a lot of parents kind of like to keep those, don't you, Kate, and refer back. And sometimes, don't you have moms that will say, oh, I've kept all these. I want to remember, you know, when you just used to write two words at the very beginning on this. And now look at this. You don't even write his words anymore. You just write phrases now. So they get excited about seeing that kind of delineated progress over time.
It is a good way to track it for us and for families. And, yeah, I do have some who keep it in a file and, every, you know, they look over it and then they put it in a file.
So and I have some moms that throw it away practically right in front of me. And not anymore, but I have had that. Or moms that I see, I think, I don't know if they're nervous or whatever, but they'll fold it into like five sheets, you know, five little folds. And I'm saying, no, let's put that up on the fridge so you can look at that this week. And think about what we did and how, you know, if you've heard those words and if you've facilitated those words when you've been playing, you know, these are the signs that he did today, and I really want you working on those this week. So you want to go ahead and help train your parents and teach your parents, too, with a little tool that you would develop like that. I think one other thing that for new therapist going into a home setting is just to try to make yourself as feel as comfortable as you can. And it is less formal than a clinical setting. And I think a lot of therapists would talk about being professional and blah, 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 blah. But that's not really my style. So I always want parents to be comfortable with me. So you want to go in and really do everything you can to make sure that you are approachable for that mom and that dad, and that you are saying, you know, tell me how he's done this week, and so that you're really involving them and you're not just there to do your treatment and then move on. You know, you really want to develop relationships with the children that you see and the parents. And again, when you go in and you act like this is not the first time I've done this and I'm so scared out of my mind and all those things that all of us feel, all that anxiety at the beginning, if you can just do everything you can to help yourself overcome that, that goes a long way to helping parents like you more and be more comfortable and appreciate you being practically part of their families for the next year, 18 months. You're not going to say anything about that? No, huh? You know what I mean, though, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I hear that by a parent, you know, that I'm seeing their child in maybe another discipline, could be an OT, PT, speech, psychologist, whatever. Frequently we're on teams, and it's not just one provider. Sometimes it is, but oftentimes it's not, and they will report to me. Sometimes, you know, she's not very friendly. She's very professional, and what I find is really almost without exception, at least for the families I serve, quote-unquote professional isn't necessarily a compliment, you know, when...
I was going to say the same thing. Okay, and she's not using that in the way that we would think is positive.
Right.
Yeah.
What they mean is, boy, I don't feel a big connection with her. She's a little standoffish. She uses words
like she's intimidating to me. Even educated parents can be intimidated. I mean, even I see lots of families that, you know, the parents, one or both parents are physicians or attorneys or whatever, but they still don't know your area of child development like you do. So while you may be a little bit intimidated by all the initials, you know, at the end of their name, they still don't know your stuff like you do. But you have to make that connection on a personal level. And again, I'm not meaning be best friends with all the parents of the children that you see. I'm just saying that we need to work really hard to be approachable and practical and friendly, to take your word, Kate, so that parents feel like we're really on their team. You know, we all want the same things, and they can talk to us about their children and tell us what they don't understand and what they don't get and what they need help learning.
Here's one that I would probably add to that, and I don't know that it's an addition, but it's just kind of another spin on that. And I see this happen on a fairly regular basis, and I think, oh. And I think it's kind of inherent in the kind of approach we use, Laura, because we always adore the kids we work with. We
right.
always enjoy our sessions. I mean, short of he has strep throat and his temperature is 104, that might not be great, but, you know, on a normal
right.
day, regardless of what might be going on with a kid or what issues he or she may have, part of seeing that twinkle that I always talk about is kind of having it yourself for that child, really loving that child, you know, even in the worst of situations, beyond the child, you know, you focus on the child and you really end up loving the child and celebrating his or her accomplishments and progress. And I sometimes think therapists don't necessarily do that because they're being professional, or maybe they just don't connect on that kind of basic social level, and they hit the ground focusing on communication or fine motor skills or gross motor skills or whatever the case may be, and they forget that they really need to love the child. And I think
exactly.
when you do love that child, parents naturally feel connected to you because they love that child. You know.
Exactly. I had a mom today that I knew that she liked me, and I would say, you know, I got over that a long time ago, having to have everybody, you know, just totally love me or whatever. But I knew that she did and that we had a pretty good connection, but she's kind of a quiet mom, and so she's not, you know, the moms that we all love as therapists. Oh, so wonderful, like, what would I do without you? You're so great. You know, don't get me wrong, I love that.
Right.
But with this mom, she's just not like that. That's just not really her personality.
Right.
And so I went today, and her cousin is in visiting, and she came out and she said, I'm not going to be in the house when you're in there because I think that'll be real distracting, but I just want to tell you, she said this mom's name, loves you. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that is, you know, that's so nice that this person would tell me that and that she's not maybe comfortable telling me that because it is kind of embarrassing.
Right.
But it was so nice to hear that this mom that isn't, she's not chatty like we are. We don't have, you know, some moms you naturally connect with and they know your children's names and you walk in and they ask, you know, how's your husband's foot? You know, all the things, you know, you might do your little small talk thing. And some parents, that just happens naturally with, and some families it doesn't. And that's okay. And this is a family that it's all, the visit's all about their kid, and that's great. But she doesn't know a ton about me personally. And, my point is, she couldn't really say those things to me, but you still do everything you can to make an impact and to make a connection and to make her feel like your kid is the only one on my caseload, and he mm-hmm. really matters to me. And this is a hard kid. I don't think I've thrown that in there. And he's a kid that, you know, on a lot of days you really have to look for the positive. You have to really look because it may not be hitting you in the face. But, you know, you do what you can to make those connections, even if you don't think that you're impacting a family like that. You probably are. You could be their lifeline, and you don't even know it. I mean, I had no idea that this mom would have ever said that
uh-huh.
or felt that way.
Sometimes
it was so nice.
Until the very end when they're getting,
right.
you know, aging out, and they tell you, or they give you this wonderful gift, and they write this wonderful
Or write
note.
You a note. Yeah.
Yes, that says, you know, an angel sent you. You've been our savior. And you think, I didn't even know that, you know, I mean.
I know. Yeah.
And because, I mean, my thing is always love the kid, love the time you're
right.
with them, commit to that. If there's a nice relationship with the parents, great. If there isn't, you know, that's okay. That's not necessarily.
Right.
I don't mean a, you know, I always want it to be nice. But, you know, if there's a special relationship, that's great. But if there isn't, that's okay.
That's okay. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay. I want them to, you know what I'm doing with the child and learn from that and implement what I want them to do. But if
there's
no big connection, then there may be with the next family. So that's fine. But I do think that is it starts with the child, and it's very, very, very important. I think some therapists sometimes don't have that social connection with the child, and they don't make enough effort to be as positive as possible about the child.
Right.
You know,
right.
And there are times that we have to say, wow, this has been, you know, look at this progress. Now we're still working on this. You know, it can't always
right.
100% woohoo, everything's great, because if it were,
why would you be there?
Probably
yeah.
wouldn't be there. But I do think some therapists forget that, you know, this is their
right.
baby. This is their special kid, and, you know, please make an effort to be as positive as you possibly can and point out something good, you know,
right.
about the child, even if you're kind of working to come up with it.
Exactly, and that's what I meant about this little boy. I mean, there are lots of days that, you know, we had some really rough sessions, but you can still make a difference with how you communicate with that little boy and how you communicate with that mom. And you may not even know how important that's been and how special that's been until the very end. So that's my point. Even if you don't feel like you're getting it back, do your best to love families.
I'm sorry, Laura, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, do your best to love families. And it does start with loving your little client when you're there. And again, I don't mean that you have to end up and be their best friend. I just mean for that hour when you're there, turn it on and do
well,
what you can
you really
to
have
make
to
a difference in their lives.
Get the social connection you need anyway.
With the
so
kids. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely have to. If you're not turning on that sparkle for them, don't expect them to turn it on for you. So
right.
really,
and to make speech a priority, and to know that your therapy is important, you know, and to know that what you're doing is going to make a difference in this kid's life, you know, but you do have to, you know, whatever anxiety you have, however disconnected you feel, whatever you're worried about, blah 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 blah, leave it in the car, and go give your family that best for an hour. And then pick up your normal life again for that next 15 or 20 minutes while you're driving to the next kid's house.
Will still be there. Laura and I joke. I guess more my jokes than yours. But I always say that the therapy I provide is oftentimes better therapy for me because it is, because you are so absorbed in what you're doing and engaged in what you're doing that even with the biggest issues in your real life, you can go in there and totally enjoy you know, a toddler for a whole hour and not think one
right.
time about what your teenager pulled or how much your mortgage is or anything. You can just escape. It's
right.
like, you know, it's awesome. But, you know, I hear from parents occasionally, you know, they'll say, well, the OT said negative, negative, negative. Well, the pediatrician said negative, negative, negative. Well, and I think, oh, you know. My heart breaks for parents who feel that way, you know, focus on their child is always about what isn't right and what isn't coming along or isn't good. And
But you can still deliver realistic news that parents need to hear, but in the kindest, gentlest way.
Right.
And the other visit that I did today was with a family whose little boy is severely impacted. He had just a ton of things happen when he was born. He's got a list of diagnoses as long as my arm. And I saw him today. He's so lucky because he has so much extended family. And I saw him today with a grandmother, or I guess she's the great-grandmother, that I don't see him with very often. And she's telling me, when we were doing Ride a Little Horsey, you know, she's telling me, gosh, I don't think he really understands this game. And I think when you say horse, he's thinking about the horse at the barn and that he wants to go to hippotherapy and blah, 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 blah. And then she, you know, kind of went on and on and on and on and on. And I have to say, well, I'm not sure if he's made that connection or not. And the reason that we're working on this little game really isn't for me to confuse him about going to do that. It's so that he's going to look at me and enjoy being with me. And that's what I want to get from you. It's just that total joy. that he could get from really playing with you and really connecting with you. And you can still tell a grandmother without saying, are you kidding me? He didn't understand that. He has no clue what you're talking about. You can still convey that hard-to-hear information in a nice, gentle, loving way so that she gets your point without you being the biggest witch and most professional person there ever was. So there's a lot to be said in your delivery, even of the bad stuff that you have to say, but families still need to know that you care about them and that most of all you care about their kids. And I think that that was your big point about loving your babies when you're there.
Yes.
Sigh. We're way over our hour.
I know. I'm trying to think.
Don't we have great jobs? Aren't we the luckiest two women in the whole world?
I always say it's like being paid to be the best grandma in the world. You get to go in there and play with the kid. And it really is play. Sometimes I joke about
yeah.
People say, what do you do for I play with babies. And it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is play, but it's kind of focused, directed,
it's skilled.
Purposeful
it's
play.
Yeah, right.
But it really needs to look like play. I have.
It does, yeah.
Occasionally I have moms or, maybe teenage sisters who will say, I could do your job. You know, I like babies.
And I say, come on down here, sister.
Yeah,
let's see
tell me how easy it is. and it, it needs to look effortless, and it needs to look like it's a lot of fun for them
right.
And for us.
And you may have to work hard to make it look like that.
Right.
But it does get easier with time, and some people are more naturally skilled at that than others. Some people have instincts. My daughter is going to be a knockout therapist. She
yes,
is going to be amazing
she
because
she has
block. That gift. She has that gift. She has that instinct. So some people have to do it. And so if you're a therapist who naturally has that, that's great. But if you're not, you need to work to make yourself look like that. So anyway, we're way over. I'm not sure we've ever run 10 minutes over before, but we love to talk about this, and I'm sure next week we'll probably, what I want to do next week is talk about those tips that parents can do to maximize the effectiveness of sessions with their kids, because I do think the majority of our audience is parents. So we'll be talking about that next week, things that you can do to make it easier for your child and maybe for you to love that hour that you spend or 2 hours that you spend with your speech therapist every week. So until then, have a great week, and I hope you'll join us back next week.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.